Hello and welcome to episode 166 of the Film Yak Podcast. I'm John.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm JR.
This week we're watching Kevin's pick, talking about Kevin's pick, Janos Vitez, or Johnny Korncob, from 1973, directed by Marcel Yankovic.
I would say so.
Okay. It's a Hungarian animated film. So we're going to be talking about that as well as other stuff we watched. And how are you guys doing today?
Doing good.
Great. Sick. Let's do it.
You're sick?
Oh, yeah.
Classic.
Oh, no.
Dude, the weather finally got here in Colorado.
Uh-oh.
So it's colds for everyone.
That's beautiful. I love the cold.
I do too.
If it gives you a cold, it's still good, you know?
Mm.
I'll take it. I'd be sick all year round if it meant we were cold all year round.
I'm with you.
I hate that it's November and hot out. Makes me insane.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry. But all right. Well, I mean, I don't think there's anything we need to get to except the main review, right?
Yeah.
It's been a minute since we recorded, but
long absence.
I know. I had wanted to get this done prior to Halloween only because of the homework from last time, Dracula.
Mm.
But
I got a bunch of like horror stuff I watched that I'll just ignore. You know, we missed the season. This is the it's a election day eve. We're in this dead zone between horror and political. So.
And the political scene is a horror show, so.
Right, so maybe we can talk about the horror.
Right? I mean, I watched a lot of horror too, but at the same time, it was all bad, so I'm just not going to talk about any of it.
Yeah.
Avoid it like the plague. All right, well, let's get into Johnny Korncob, our review here.
Oop.
Which is Kevin's pick. Kevin, why this movie? Why now?
Well, it was something that I had watched a couple years ago, and I wanted to see how I felt about it now. And you guys hadn't watched it, so, and, you know, I'm kind of, sort of, you know, trying to live up to a reputation of being an animation guy on the podcast, so.
You are the animation guy.
Yeah, you're defaulted.
No one can take that away from you.
Yeah, so, and yeah, you know, it just seemed like something interesting to, you know, to look at and talk about.
Cool. Had you seen any Yankovic's work before this movie?
So the reason I watched Johnny Korncob in the first place was because I had seen on Letterboxd's top 100 animation list. His other movie, Son of the White Mare, is on there. So I'd watch that, and then I watched Johnny Korncob, and I did the same this go around. I watched Son of the White Mare again, which actually went up a little bit.
Interesting.
Mm.
Cool poster.
Yeah, it does look good.
Yeah.
This is a later film, 81. Have you? So those are the only two you've seen?
So far, I think Tragedy of Man is on YouTube, if it's a decent enough, you know, whatever, transfer, upload. So I'll probably try to get around to that at some point. But that one's like 2 and some odd hours long, so that...
So almost 3.
Yikes. Okay, well. Yikes.
Yeah, that might be a little more difficult, but...
He apparently won an Oscar for Sisyphus, the short film he made.
Oh, nice.
It's only 3 minutes long, so you should probably check that one out.
Yeah.
All right, Fall of Man. Yeah, that's heavy, dude. 166. Mm. Yikes.
Yeah.
It's already in my watch list, apparently. I don't know when I would have added that, but at some point in the past, I'm going to add Son of the White Mare. Anyway, okay, well, I watched this movie on my television set, and the first thing I notice is the animation reminds me of, like, advertisements from the late 60s, early 70s, like ad drawings, which my dad used to do. He used to do ad drawings. It's like before they would photograph models a lot, they would have artists draw the models with the clothes on for like department stores and things. And he went to a year and a half course or something. He claims he finished it in 10 months. I don't know if he's bragging or not, but he's like, I mean, he's good at drawing. He used to draw these pictures for department stores. And it's like these shapes are very similar to that, like where he's got these massive legs, like his pants are huge, his boots are bigger than his torso, you know, and they're like just massive, you know. And it just reminded me a lot of that, and like just a real sort of, I'm gonna say dated, but not, I'm not saying that in a negative way, it's just very of its time, you know.
It's yeah, a
style that's very obviously 60s, 70s inspired. And I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about it, because when it started, I didn't know, I hadn't seen anything out of it. And before I started it, and then he shows up with the giant boots and the psychedelic colors and everything. And I wasn't sure. But as it went on, I'd say I enjoyed it. I liked a lot of the sort of clever things that they do animation wise, like specifically when he gets the, like when he becomes a soldier the first time and the guy gives him the canteen of wine and he drinks the wine and then the uniform melts onto him. Yeah. I like that. Like that kind of stuff's really cool to me. I like that. And just the way they illustrate like the passage of time and stuff, especially during the military section, the different campaigns and battles and so forth. I thought that was really interesting and cool. And the weird surreal shit, like the sheep climbing into the sky and becoming clouds, like that's cool too. I'm into it. I liked it. What'd you guys think?
I also like it.
Heck yeah.
I also liked it. And it definitely, it's like I'm noticing animation. I feel like I was paying more attention to animation than anything, you know, with the story. Sure. And then, like, watched it late at night, had to even rewind a couple times, like, did I miss something? He's like, no, I didn't miss anything. It's just, you know, it's kind of moving with its own sort of fairy tale logic. So I think this is, yeah, poetic fairy tale, as it mentions. I liked lighting changes in this.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way the animation color would change based on the light. I thought those all those transitions looked really good. This film looked really good, and it sounds like, and I don't know if this is confirmed or just Wikipedia, that Marcel Yankovic was inspired by the Yellow Submarine style of animation.
And yeah, I could see that.
Yeah,
it's like I was feeling that, but I mean, honest, I was just assuming that like he inspired Yellow Submarine. I was like,
yeah.
I know the timing of that doesn't work out, but it's just interesting to think. I was inspired by like that massively popular thing from the most popular band in the world.
Yeah.
For this kind of weirdo Hungarian film.
Yeah. And I actually went back and watched Yellow Submarine to kind of have another look at it. Cause when I was younger, I was more into the Beatles, and I remember watching Yellow Submarine a lot. And yeah, like it definitely has a lot more like collage type stuff, like more like Terry Gilliam's like Monty Python animations. Johnny Korenkov doesn't have any of that, but I think, yeah, you can definitely, like, especially, like, looking at the Blue Meanies and, like, looking at, the bandits that he meets in the middle of the woods, like, you can definitely see that in, you know, like, the Blue Meanies and Yellow Submarine.
I thought there was, it was weird in the beginning there, you know, the credits, play out at the beginning, of course, and, they had different credits for drawers versus tracers.
Oh yeah.
I wonder what that's about. Like, I don't know. What are they tracing? Like, is this part of this rotoscoped? I don't know. I was just very, I thought that was interesting. I've never seen a credit for a tracer. It reminded me, immediately thought of Chasing Amy.
Yeah.
And him saying, I'll trace a line around your dead fucking body, you know, after he's been called a tracer.
You're mucking with a G, pal.
That's right.
I wonder, do you think, like, it's like someone, like, draws sort of like a version of the scene, like a wide version of the screen, and then we have tracers come in and do sort of like the nitty gritty of the movement.
I was thinking of it in terms of like keyframes, I guess, like, because I know that that's a thing, like where they'll have certain frames that are like the most important ones that they'll have the, like a really good artist draw, you know, like the lead artist of a specific character. But again, this is 1973 and it's in Hungary. So like, I don't know how things translate, you know what I mean? Like if they have the same sort of process at that time in that place that say, you know, obviously they're not working at like the level of like Disney or something, you know, at this time.
Well, and this is the first one.
Oh, this is his first film?
Animated. No. First animated feature from Hungary.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Is that a thing?
I just know that. I have not read anything about this movie. Sorry.
I think I read that, but now I'm wondering if I'm crazy.
I mean, 73 seems late, but maybe. I don't know anything about Hungary either. Like, were they like going through like political changes and stuff? I don't know.
I think they were, because I mean, they're on that side of the Iron Curtain, so.
Right. It's probably difficult for them to express themselves.
Yeah. Although it was funny, like, I don't know what.
The first ever animated feature film from Hungary.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't know what movie. Did Richard Gere just do one with Schrader?
Yes.
Okay. On some press thing, like he was talking about how all of Russia's best movies like happened while they were a communist country, and then once communism fell, like their movies started to suck. So we have this idea that, you know, like freedom is, you know, stifled under communism, but not necessarily so.
I mean, well, maybe the fact that they're the films that are coming out of communist Russia are like a lot of them, I guess, are propaganda films, but like the good ones are propaganda films, some of them, but a lot of them are like veiled metaphor also, and like there's they're trying to get, like, it's like the Iranian filmmakers, you know, who are making stuff to, you know, fight the power essentially, and they would be making those same things if there was no power to fight, right?
True. Yeah,
so it's like the best music, like Jonathan and I talked about this a lot, like Panda Bear from Animal Collective, he recorded this album called Young Prayer like a long time ago, but it was right after his father died, and it's just like this really amazing, you know, haunting, sad record, and he couldn't make that without the pain of the passing of his father, and Beck lost or divorced his wife or something and made Sea Change, so, you know, it's like good work comes out of pain and tribulation, I guess.
This was like a whole thing about why Richard Gere.
Richard Gere has a bone to pick with post-Soviet Russian film.
Indeed. Anyway, so what did you guys think of the score?
I liked one specific song so much. I'm going to try to find it for this episode, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to, but the, so when they arrive in, I guess they're in Italy, and like the ice and all the horses are slipping over the ice. And then there's that like guitar picking thing. It's like electric guitar. And he's like, and start singing that song about like Johnny, do you regret being a soldier now? All that stuff. I thought that shit rocked. But otherwise, I mean, I don't know. Kind of, some of the songs are like a, you know, they never gets like too hokey or anything. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was funny going from like watching Son of the White Mare. Like, there's a lot of like, it's basically all like synth noise, but then watching this, it's like a full on, like you would think it was pulled from like a, you know, like a ballet or, you know, like tone poem, like Ein Heldenleben or something from Stravinsky.
I mean, that's interesting. I would think that. Surprised it's not. This is apparently based on a 19th century epic poem, which, I don't know. I mean, that does seem Eastern European epic poem, fairy tale shit.
Yeah.
how is it not a ballet?
Right. Actually.
That's kind of a really goofy title. Like, I don't get, do you guys understand the title? Like, why is he called Johnny Corncob? Did I miss something?
Well, in the poem, like, he's an orphan who's found in a cornfield.
Do they show happening in this movie?
They do not.
Okay.
I read the synopsis of the epic poem, and yeah, like he's found as a baby in a cornfield, and so a farmer finds him and brings him up, and you know, so he's called Johnny Corncob. But then it's later when, you know, he and the rest of the Hussars conquer the Turks in France, where the King of France dubs him Sir John, or John the Valiant.
John the Valiant, yeah. And then he gives him his daughter with the blue nipples.
Yeah. And he's like, nah.
Did you guys saw that, right? That her nipples were showing?
Yeah.
Okay, because it's like, am it's I only crazy? In the very, it's only twice. It's like in the very first time you see her, it's almost like a still image where they're talking about her or something, and she just appears on the screen briefly, but her nipples are like, her tits are hanging out of her dress. And then later on, she shows up and like in real life, and she's got her dress on, and you can't see that. But then like briefly for like 5 or 6 frames, she's got blue nipples when she's running around. It's really strange. I'm not sure if they were like, that was like a choice that they made, and then they were like, let's white out these nipples. This is no good, you know? Like, yeah, but then they missed a couple of frames. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I mean,
it was bizarre, because otherwise I'd say the movie is like, I mean, with the exception, I guess he's cutting people in half and shit, but it's not, you know, it's not violent. Like, it's not, there's no blood, and those people don't die. Like, they're running around still just in pieces.
Yeah,
I would say it's like a PG kind of movie, you know. Yeah.
I mean, it feels like a children's story.
Yeah, like, I mean, movies, like, you know.
But then it's got a girl with her blue tits hanging out, so it's like,
yeah. Well,
maybe the kids won't notice. I didn't.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't care. I'd show it to a kid. I don't, you know, whatever. But
yeah.
You know.
And I got to imagine in Hungary, you know, like they see that and they're like, yeah, and.
Yeah, right. It's not a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know anything about
it's European culture, Hungarian. Man. European culture. Yeah. They just run around with their tits out. No big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved a line, a specific line in the film, which was actually, I think I wrote down two, but the main one is when he's chasing the fellow, one of the guys in France that they're fighting. And he says, stop or I'll open a gate in your body through which your miserable soul can flee to hell. Well, that's a good line.
That's so good.
And then later on, the other one is that when he gets to the fairyland at the end of the movie, and one of the giants tells him the gates of the fairyland are guarded by terrible miracles. Which is like such a weird, terrible miracle. I've never heard of that before. You know, it's a good combination of negative, positive.
Yeah.
Maybe we would like this epic poem.
Yeah, I
some of that stuff comes from the poem.
Yeah, I can't. I would imagine it does.
Yeah.
I loved the mountain creatures when he goes to the underworld or whatever, and he's like talking to the mountain king, and he kills him with the rock. And
oh yeah, the giants. Yeah,
yeah, the giants. And then he's like, he grabs the one, and they walk across the ocean, and it like zooms in, and he's got a campfire going in his ear. It's badass. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah,
I like the giants a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's funny, like, this is one of those instances where, like, you know, the movie is a solid, like, 76 minutes.
Yeah.
But, like, I wouldn't have minded, you know, more of the stuff that, you know, like, plot points that could have been fleshed out, or, like, more adventures, you know, throughout. Because, like, in the poem, like, apparently he's like once he defeats the giants, like that's one of like a series of like things that he's trying to do to give himself a heroic death. And then finally, like I actually would have preferred, like, in the poem, apparently, like, he gets the giants to help him kill all these witches. And it turns out that, like, the last witch to die and, like, leave the land free of darkness was Ilushka's stepmother, who, you know, worked her to death.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and he's got, like, carries around that flower in his hat, mm-hmm. that was, like, plucked from her grave, and, like, In the poem, he apparently, like, throws it into, like, a lake in the middle of the island, and, like, but it's, like, the water of life, so she comes back to life, and instead of just being revealed, like, in the movie.
I don't mind that either. I like what you're saying is interesting. That would have been a good way to do it. I was, like, wondering how, when he comes back rich to the village and he finds her dead, I was like, okay, this is like, obviously she has to come back. Like, this has to have like an ending where he rides off into the sunset with her. Cause it's like an epic, it's just like this way that these things go. And, I was wondering how they were going to bring her back. And I was not dissatisfied that she ends up being like the fairy queen in the fairy island of the, you know, underworld or wherever they're at the end of the movie. I like the idea that the movie like devolves into surrealism essentially in the last act. Like it just, there's almost no dialogue for like the last, you know, 10 minutes or so. It's just him traveling to get to that fairy world, and they're just running around, and I don't know. I really enjoyed all that.
Yeah.
I like how he becomes the fairy king.
Yeah.
By eating the golden apple. That was cool too. Just like him transforming. That was badass. That was great. I could watch that kind of stuff all day. Immediately when he became the fairy king, I was like, oh, and I even made the note before I saw her. I was like, oh, Ilushka is the fairy queen, guaranteed. And then she shows up.
Yeah.
Had to happen.
I had some questions, you know, about some of the other characters. So I kept, you know, it's like, kept seeing these ridiculous looking people, and I kept being like, am I looking at like racist caricature happening in like the animation?
Probably.
And I didn't like find any like writing about it, like legit writing about it, but it's definitely something that is mentioned throughout like some Letterboxd comments. You know, like just representations of Central and South Asian people is not the best. I was like, okay.
I mean,
just put that out there.
You know.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's a product of its time, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I think the Nation of Hungary has some long-standing issues with the Ottoman Empire.
I knew anything about that, but I don't.
Just like never took a history class, I guess.
I mean, I feel like I've definitely read entire Wikipedia pages about certain battles from the Ottoman Empire, but I don't, you know, that's just like something you do in a fleeting moment when you're bored. I don't remember any of it. It is fascinating, though.
One of those battles that you might have read was, I mean, it's a little further south in Romania, but Vlad Tepes, you know, the historical Dracula.
Yeah.
Him and his, you know, forest of the Impaled.
Sure. Like,
that was him telling, you know, the Ottoman Empire, don't come here.
Yeah.
We will kill you. In the most horrible way possible.
I read his page the other day, actually.
Yeah.
Because, I wonder why. Yeah. Well, yeah, because I had watched Dracula, and some other reason, too, that I don't remember why. There's something else that made me get into it. But, that shit's always interesting, you know? I'm into history. I think history is really cool and very interesting. I just wish I could remember a lot of it. I thought that in this movie, the only thing that I really did not like were, comedy beats. Didn't it work for me? Like, there's certain, like, when he goes to that tavern at the beginning and all those guys, I don't know if they're like criminals or something, all those guys like surround him.
Yeah, they're like bandits.
Yeah. There's some comedy stuff going on there that didn't work for me. Just wasn't funny, you know, and I sort of wish they hadn't tried. Just stick with the story, you know. The story can be lighthearted without trying to go for a laugh. In my opinion. So, but aside from that, I enjoyed it quite a bit. I mean, I will say that it's not, I like the animation. I'm very impressed by the animation. It's not my thing necessarily. It's not my preference for what animation should look like, but I do like it. I did like what it looked like. And again, I just like some of the choices that they make. It's cool. Like some of the way shit morphs into things. I don't know. It's just really abstract at times, and I dig it. I dig it. But I'm out of notes.
Yeah.
Same.
Well, ratings?
I'm going 4.
I'll go 3.5.
I am also a 3.5. So let's do, so we're not going to do the typical Letterboxd roulette because all the actors in this are Hungarian, and I'm guessing JR is going to crush us with any of these guys. Although I have seen Zelery, which stars the guy from who does the voice of what's his face. And I've seen, the Belatar Macbeth. So I've got 3 from this guy. Believe it
First
or not.
Guy,
the main guy. Yeah, Georgi.
Well, I've got 10.
Halby. Have you seen the Damnation and so forth? Mephisto? Okay, well, anyway, so we're not going to use the actors is the point that I'm trying to make. And we agreed beforehand. And JR, what a goof. He totally goofed on the Cinematrix today and somehow quit without submitting any answers.
I just, you know, like I'm just like using my kind of thumb scroll up so I can refresh, and I just kind of fat finger the give up button, which, you know, becomes the show results button when you finish the puzzle.
I'm not gonna lie, dude.
But I just give up.
If I had done that, I would have opened a different browser and done it again.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, kudos to you. Very honest of you to just be like, "Well, I lost, whatever." You know? But I would have. I don't even think that's cheating. Honestly, that's just like
I don't know. Like it's lately seemed like John does well, I do kind of okay, and then JR comes in and just
it
blows us to pieces.
It just depends.
No.
You guys win this. I lose this plenty. I'm looking for examples.
You always beat me by four or five points. It's like insane. So I'll think I'd be like, oh, I got like 2600. I crushed it today. And then I'll come and be like 2604. And I'm just like, what the fuck, dude? I had so many one percenters in there.
I mean, you guys were insane yesterday. You're like, I can't remember just X-Men and Matrix movies. I was like, what's going on here?
Bro, that's no. The point is that's all there was for Carrie Ann Moss. She's been in like four things. I mean,
I know.
It's insanely difficult to come up with anything outside of Matrix Resurrections.
Mm. And I didn't.
But anyway, I mean, I don't like it when they use actors who are like her, who have barely done anything of note.
I mean, that can't be like. It can't be real. She's done stuff.
I mean, she's done stuff, but it's just like...
You don't know the stuff.
You don't know any of the stuff because I guess like the shadow of the Matrix looms large. It's just like, that's all I know. And like Memento, all I think about with her is Memento and the Matrix films.
And I completely forgot. Spaced on Memento.
And then I spaced on Red Planet, which I don't even know would have worked yesterday, but I looked it up afterwards. I was like, oh fuck, Red Planet. I used to love Red Planet. I forgot she was in that. Anyways, so we decided in advance that JR was going to take this one. So
Suspect Zero. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, that too. I know. We talked about Suspect Zero. I forgot about that one, too. The movie that it landed on first, JR, is a little-known film called American Psycho from 2000, directed by Mary Harron.
It's been in the news, right?
Yeah.
Reimagining it, Luca, for some reason.
I would let you off, though, if you didn't want to do that one, because, I mean, I know it's a... For me, I mean, I've seen American Psycho a lot, so I wouldn't want to necessarily rewatch this, but...
I mean, I've seen it many times. I'm not, like, against watching it. I probably haven't seen it in more than
10 years. I'll tell you what. I'll give you this one or the other one that came up, which you haven't seen.
Okay.
Which is called The Boy and the Beast from 2015, and it's an anime. The Boy and the Beast, directed by Mamoru Hosoda, who did Wolf Children and Belle. He did Belle.
I liked Belle. Okay.
Yeah. This is from 2015, though, and it's all 2 hours.
I'll do this. Okay. I'll do The Boy and the Beast.
Sounds good. So that's going to be your homework. Oh, and Kevin, your brother gave this 4.5. So he loved it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's. That being said, let's jump into our homework from last week, which I believe we all watched.
Yeah.
The Terrence Fisher Dracula from 1958, starring Christopher Lee as Dracula, and Peter Cushing as Van Helsing, and Michael Goff as Arthur Holmwood. Now, Kevin, had you seen this before?
I had not.
Okay. What'd you think?
Honestly, I was kind of bored through most of it. And Michael Goff just like you're just reciting lines. Like, you're not acting. Peter Cushing is acting. But he's just saying lines.
Dude.
In a sort of dramatic way.
I agree. Michael Goff is terrible in this movie. And I wasn't bowled over by any of the acting, but yeah, I agree. Michael Goff was like, he seemed like out of his depth. And I will say it's weird. Like, Christopher Lee, he's just like, he's barely in this. He has like two scenes. You know what I mean? It's just strange because it's like it's called Dracula.
Yeah, the horror of Dracula.
Yeah, and it's like, where is Dracula? Like, he disappears for, 80 of the 82 minutes, it feels like.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, and I agree with you, for my money, it's just sort of dull. I mean, I didn't hate it. There are elements of it that I liked, and I sort of appreciate Lee's take on Dracula, if you want to call it that, but it's just like, I don't know. There just wasn't enough of it. I wanted to see more, but I will say that, the ending The death scene, I thought, was absolutely spectacular. Like, I would, it jumped the rating a lot for me. Just that last 2 or 3 minutes where the sun is hitting him and he's turning into ash. Like, I just thought it was really a great idea, great visualization. Never seen that before. Great, you know, effect. Usually, yeah, exactly. Usually see people or vampires, you know, burning up or disappearing or whatever. And this, I've just never seen him turn to ash before. I thought that was a really cool idea. And the fact that, like, his, you know, his clothes were still on and his ring was on, you know, his hand turns to ash. I thought that was just so fucking, and just sort of like graphic and in a, like, a disturbing way for 1958, especially just like the fact that he's like losing his body parts, but he's screaming and still alive and everything. And I just thought it was a very sort of, brutal death scene. Really good. I enjoyed it. I wish there was more, like, I don't know. It's more like this. It seems like so low stakes. It seems like so low stakes. Like, cause it's, I don't know, like the way they chase each other, they don't really seem like they want to catch each other in the castle at the end. They're sort of like, they're like speed walking, you know, after each other. And, I don't know. Yeah. I just wish it was more like, you know, intense. And I guess, you know, it's one Dracula movie out of 400 Dracula movies, and there's plenty of intense Dracula movies. Maybe that's just not what this one is, but I did want to watch, I saw Christopher Lee is in another vampire film. He's not playing Dracula, though. He's playing like a different, like a knockoff of Dracula. I don't know where it is. I just added it to my watch list like yesterday or the day before. But anyway, I'll find it. JR, what's your deal? You love this movie.
This movie is really good. You guys are idiots, as usual. And it's, you know, it's colors, it's sets, it's, I think the take on the story, it's just like the way that it streamlined, kind of starting with Harker, you know, getting there, making his intentions clear. Like, it kind of just jumps out. I like the Christopher Lee Dracula. I like that he, like, moves very quickly, not just when he is, you know, like, chasing people, but, like mm-hmm. taking Harker through the mansion. He's taking the steps two at a time. I enjoy that. I think the Dracula stuff here is, it's about the women. And it's about how goddamn horny they get once they're bitten by this Dracula. I think you guys are spot on about Goff. He's really bad. But I don't know. I enjoy everything else around it, and I was not bored. I don't think there's time in this movie to get bored. It moves pretty quickly.
We're gonna have to agree to disagree there. Felt like it was, it's just, you know, it is, it's just like, it's sort of a victim of the fact that, I feel like it's just a victim of the fact that it's made when it's made, and they're unable to get intense with it, you know? So it's the same issue that any Dracula movie from this time, like the original Dracula has the same issue. Although I didn't find the original Dracula boring at all, but
no,
maybe because, I don't know, there's like more interesting filmmaking going on. And Bela Lugosi is maybe more interesting than... I agree, Christopher Lee. There's something about Christopher Lee's performance here. It's so bizarre. It's like not at all what you would expect any actor to choose to do as Dracula. Like, the way he behaves in this is very, like, not, you know, the 500-year-old, you know, soul sucker.
But, I mean, you know, I get it. Like, you're... It's like, we can't all just keep doing Lugosi, right? It's like,
that's true. Yeah.
Put on our big thick accent, and,
right?
And move very slow and deliberate. And
I wouldn't want him to do that. I just the way he carries, like you're, like what you're saying, how he's very peppy and sort of direct, and even his like speech pattern is really, I don't know. It's just really like a strange choice, but I'm not altogether against it.
What's the name of the movie that you?
Oh, I'm a total moron, and it's not a Christopher Lee one at all. It's I got it confused. it's a Bela Lugosi vampire film that he did in 1935, and it's another Todd Browning movie. It's called Mark of the Vampire.
Oh, okay. Mm. Yeah.
You've seen it, and he plays Count Mora. But I think I saw like a clip or something somewhere from it, and that's why I added it, because I thought it looked interesting. But
it is interesting. Cool. It's only 60 minutes.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
And I've only seen one Todd Browning movie, so that feels wrong. So
you never, like, you didn't see Freaks?
No, I haven't seen Freaks. I guess
that's the big one.
Yeah, that's the big Dracula. One. I don't know. Freaks freaks me out. I don't know that I want to watch Freaks. Seems really disturbing.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
Mm.
But anyway, neither here nor there. Let's get into what we watched, I guess. Who wants to kick things off?
It's rough. It's like it's been like 5 weeks since we recorded. We've all watched, I don't know, mostly garbage, I would assume. I assume we watched mostly garbage.
I watched, I have 4 things to talk about, and I really enjoyed all of them.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, I mean, I watched like 25 things, so yeah, mostly garbage.
I didn't keep track of what you guys watched. Anyone watch Brothers on Amazon Prime?
I would never. No. I can't believe you watched that, dude. What a waste of time. Like, that looked like absolute dog shit. I can't believe anybody gets... Like, they were talking about it on Film Junk. This looks great. I can't believe I haven't heard of this. This is like, it looks terrible. What looks good about it?
I don't remember what I watched on Prime, but it was just sort of like the trailer for it came out after it ended. And I was like, what is this? And then I looked it up. It was directed by the guy that did Palm Springs. And
oh,
I was
so like, you had to watch it.
Well, I don't know if I had to, but I was just like... And what else am I doing right now at 1 a.m? And the answer was, I'm turning on Brothers. It's like, I did something I didn't like about myself this past month. I had a lot going on while being like mostly off from work. I ended up having to do a bunch of work, and it was all late at night. And so I ended up doing a lot of like second screen watches of things that I was like testing out and then getting bored with, and then I would like pick up the computer and start doing some work, or things that I just kind of turned on knowing this is just background. Brothers was neither of those things. I fully committed to Brothers. It's like one of the few things that I was like, I'm in, I'm watching this piece of trash. I'm watching, Josh Brolin and Peter Dinklage and Glenn Close and Brendan Fraser just do nonsense, and it's you know, it's just like a lazy streaming movie with very little going on, and I don't, you know, it's like, it's for these like kind of like comedies with a heart, I guess. So there's like a sibling relationship being mended and a strange mother situation with Glenn Close, and we'll get back to Glenn Close because I don't know what the fuck's going on with her right now. But it's like we're just taking like one pass at the screenplay for these things, and we're just deciding we don't need to tighten anything up. It's like we're not going to try to make things funnier. We're not going to try to like, I don't know. I don't write comedy, but it seems like taking, like, we have an idea for a joke. Let's hone it. Let's make it better and better. And this is just, it just feels like the first pass at a joke. And, you know, it was like 84 minutes. So who knows? Maybe this was edited to death already anyway. But Glenn Close this year, she's just like, she's being weird. And it's not like she's like the worst thing in this movie. She's not, right? But she's just like this awful mother, a criminal, who disappears in these kids, these twins' childhood, and now she's back. And I think that she's like, you know what? They're never giving me the Oscar. It's fine. I'll just do
what is, what else did she do this year?
She did Deliverance. The Deliverance.
Oh, the yeah, the possession thing. Yeah.
And she's like insane in that movie. It's wild.
Maybe she's like Nicolas Cage. You remember Nicolas Cage had that whole thing where he was like, "This is the era where I'm like really overacting, and then I'm gonna get subtle again."
Yeah, I mean, she's almost 80, which is wild. Jesus. Is that right? Am I good at math? No, I'm not good at math, but she is almost 80, confirmed. And I feel the last thing I saw her in before this year was Hillbilly Elegy, which was also just a shmush abortion. It was the worst, and she was bad in it. But again, she got nominated for her Oscar and lost. I don't think the Oscar's coming for The Deliverance. And she's definitely been, not for Brothers.
She's been nominated several times, eh?
Yeah, I think she's lost either 5 or 6. She's number one.
She should have won for Hook.
You know, everyone thought she was going to win for The Wife. And,
did they?
Yeah, she was the, yeah. That favorite. Was like the races all sewn up for a month kind of thing on this movie that no one had ever, no one had the ability to see it, but it's like she's winning. But then The Favorite came out and.
It's better.
It's way better. It's. But a supporting actor in The Favorite won best lead actress. So,
gotta do what you gotta do. Olivia Colman. Can't fight Yorgos, you know?
Fight Yorgos. All right, anyway, someone take over. Well, we're still on The Brothers. Let's get off The Brothers.
Okay. I'll go. I watched Alien Romulus, which is also a 2024 release. A new Alien film from Fede Alvarez, who, very hit and miss. I liked Don't Breathe quite a bit. I hated Girl in the Spider's Web. And then Evil Dead was okay. I haven't seen his Spanish films. Well, these are short films, but I haven't seen them. And then this is his Alien movie, which is definitely like a throwback to... It's like a mix of the first two Alien films aesthetically. Like he borrows a lot of like the, you know, CRT monitors and MS-DOS text sort of stuff going on, you know, typing and so forth. And he even borrows one of the, it's sort of weird. I don't know if it's a spoiler. Like there's a character in this film who is one of the actors from one of the original films, but it's not the same character. So it's, When I first appeared, I was like, this is dumb. Why would they do this? But then they explain that it's not the same character. And it's like, okay, well, that's a little bit better. But even still, it's still kind of dumb. So it loses a few points there. But I did like the sort of the way that it gets the characters into the predicament that they're in with the aliens. I thought was smart and interesting. And it didn't take very long, which was nice. And there's a gravity element that's kind of fun in it, where they have like a gravity generator on the ship and they have to turn it on and turn it off, that sort of thing. Mm. And the ending is pretty wild and sort of ties in nicely to the Prometheus Covenant mythology in a way. That's not too overt. So... I think overall, you know, it's pretty successful. And I'm looking forward to the apparent sequel that's coming with Kaylee Spaney and David Johnson, I think his name is, the guy who plays the...
spoiler.
What?
Because Kaylee Spaney lives, apparently.
Well, I mean, it's announced in the press they're coming back for the sequel.
Okay.
You don't think Kaylee Spaney lives? Name one of the Alien movies where the lead female dies.
Except for Alien Prometheus. Dream. Okay.
No, she doesn't die.
Charlize Theron doesn't die.
Charlize Theron's not the lead female in Prometheus, goofball.
Who's the lead female?
Noomi Rapace is.
I thought that was the next one.
No.
No.
Noomi Rapace dies in between Prometheus and Covenant.
Okay.
Who's in Covenant? Covenant is Catherine Waterston is the lead. And she doesn't die either. The lead never dies, except for in Alien 3 when, you know, contractually, Sigourney Weaver's like, you better kill me.
Yeah. God, why was I? Yeah, I these movies all run together in my head. Apparently, or rather, the new ones do. Ugh. I could anyway. I could never have told you Catherine Waterston was in Covenant.
Well, that's fair. I think Catherine Waterston is sort of a forgettable presence in a lot of films, but
I'd agree with that.
But I like the Alien Romulus is the point, and that's all I've got to say about that.
Is this streaming anywhere yet? Probably not.
I think it's just like for rental. I saw it on my Plex.
I'm ready for it. I will watch it.
As soon as it's available. Believe me, it dropped on my Plex, and like literally, I watched it that night. I waited for Amelia to go to sleep, and I watched the whole thing. It was like midnight when I got. I was like, I gotta see this thing. I'm dying to see this thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kevin.
So let's see. So I watched a few Barbet Schroeder films because Sharon and I ended up watching Single White Female on Max, and it's okay. It's kind of, I don't know. It could have been more intriguing, but you know, whatever. Jennifer Jason Leigh is great at playing a, you know, unhinged character. So that got me wondering about, you know, some of the other movies that he had made. So I watched The Venerable W, which is about this Buddhist monk who is rabidly Islamophobic and like going out of his way to like be like the number one hater of Muslims in Myanmar.
It doesn't sound very Buddhist,
right? Like, and like that's the thing. Like, he's like, it's weird too, because like he's taking like it, you know, it's sort of similar to what's going on now, like taking small little things and like blowing them entirely out of proportion and using that as excuses for violence. But yeah, like there's also like lots of clips of, you know, monks, you know, queuing up for food and, you know, saying very good, peaceful things. And then there's him going, man, they're trying to, you know, they're trying to drive us out, man. They're trying to take over our country and trying to destroy our religion. And there's like, you know, like the Muslim population of Myanmar is like 3%.
Hmm.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it might be a tiny bit. It might be like 5 or like 7%. But yeah, like this is not a thing. So yeah, that was something. And then I watched his Idi Amin film again, which is, you know, I mean, it's kind of interesting because, you know, it's one of those things where like there's this part in the movie where he's like, Idi Amin is like, look, this has to happen. And then 2 weeks later, this guy was found dead in the Nile. But other than that, like, it is just kind of an hour and a half of this dude, like, being very full of himself and also very anti-Israel. Which was like, oh, okay. I mean, things are a little different in the world now, but, like, you know, we don't need the help that he was offering in the resolution of this conflict. Anyway. And I tried to watch La Vallée, which I had actually seen before, but the DVD was just skipping too bad, so I couldn't actually get through the movie. But it did make me want to listen to Obscured by Clouds again, because that was one of my, I think that was like, at one time, that was like my number two Pink Floyd album.
What?
Behind Animals.
Oh, they, like, no.
Don't. No. Don't even.
Animals.
Is this like a, did they do the score or is that album?
Yeah, they did the score.
Does that album score? Okay.
JR doesn't know he hates Pink Floyd, remember?
I'm abstaining from the conversation of favorite Pink Floyd albums, yeah.
Well, at least we can all agree that The Final Cut is not their best album.
I've never even heard The Final Cut, dude. I'm sure it's garbage.
I definitely have not listened to that. I assume it's garbage.
Yeah.
I'm not going to call other Pink. I don't partake, but I don't call it garbage.
Okay.
You better not. Except for Division Bell, you can say that's garbage. I don't like that one.
So fucking profound. Have you guys seen the lasers?
Dude, Dark Side is like literally top three of all time. Okay, sorry to tell you, I don't care how much of a yacht dad man I sound like saying something like that. It's amazing. Okay. Is back to me.
Or JR?
Yeah.
Is it JR? Whatever. Sorry. Go ahead, JR.
What
are you all? You're asking. JR started, and I did. Go ahead, JR.
Yeah, so I, you know, just spending some time on the old Maxi Poo, because Maxi Poo put out Maxine, which was not great. And I think, John, did you talk about Maxine when
it? Oh, no, I didn't talk about it. I did watch it, and I agree it's not, I would say it's not good.
Yeah, no, it's not. And I... Pearl is like the only one of these Ty West movies that has worked at all for me.
I agree.
Me too. So, but then I also watched Caddo Lake, which is a new, you know, like they were promoting it as like horror adjacent. It's really like kind of a, you know, sci-fi ish type thing. It's like something weird's going on. But you know, I was like, oh, I know that lake. That's in Louisiana. And maybe this is a Louisiana movie. And it is kind of, although it's like a lake that is, I think it's technically in Louisiana and Texas and maybe a little bit of Arkansas. It's like right up there past Shreveport. But it was mostly on the Texas side. And this is about a family who is quite broken. Just like a strange daughter, stepsister, stepfamily situation. Someone gets lost on this lake. And then some weird stuff starts happening where it's like you're not sure what is going on and like why people aren't reacting the way you think they would. And then like there's this whole other thing with Dylan O'Brien where he is doing something on the lake. But it just like feels very separate. And then it becomes very clear why he is separate. And it becomes clear what is going on and what is going on ends up being dumb because this is ultimately like primer is not the right word, but it's like it's dumb primer. Like there's a time travel element that is unexplained. Like there's a, you know, an abnormality on the lake. But I expect, you know, if you were to watch it, which you won't, and that's okay. Don't. You would probably be, you'd be a few minutes ahead of the film at any given point, I think. And that's just kind of a bummer because I think there's stuff in the premise that could have been cool with, you know, just some different filmmakers maybe. I don't know who Celine Held and Logan George are and what they do, but this one was not great.
John. Interesting. Are you going to talk about Salem's Lot?
Didn't I start talking about it last time?
Did you? I was just going to test. I only asked.
I hadn't quite finished it.
I was going to say that I tried to watch it and I made it about 11 minutes in before I had to turn it off because it was just like, it looked like it was shot on like an iPhone and the acting and the writing was atrociously bad. And like this guy, Pullman's kid, like he's like a piece of wood. I can't do it.
No. He's in another movie I talked about a couple years ago or a year and a half ago called I think Starling. He's fantastic. Like, he's awesome.
Really?
Like he is the future. But then I mean, and this like this was filmed before that. They've been sitting on Salem's Lot for 3 years.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. But no, like and especially at the beginning, like I remember thinking
like they're making Pullman like look like CGI.
Mm-hmm.
The way that he is just
it all looks
so weirdly in
fake.
That
everything looks yeah. super like fake and it's like soap opera effect almost.
It's really it's weird. So gross. And it, like I think it looks a little bit better during the night scenes.
Mm.
But it's a bad movie. And I already talked about how like it just feels like things are like cut out. Things don't make sense. Major reveals are made by someone just being like, I saw this happen, but like you don't see it on screen. It's like it's gross.
Have you seen the original miniseries?
No, like the Tobe Hooper one?
Yeah.
Did he do it? No. I know it's on Max right now, so I should watch it, but
I would have watched it, but I don't remember very much about it at all.
I would have watched it already if it was a movie and not a miniseries from the 80s, you know. I'm not watching an 80s miniseries. I'm just not going to do it. Can't do it.
Shogun rules, man.
Hey, so you say. You hear Tarantino talking about Dune and Shogun?
Yeah. Wasn't he like,
I've seen it before. I've seen fucking sandworms in the 80s. I'm done. I don't need to see it again.
Lame. That's so, I mean, it's definitely like lame with Shogun, where it's like, apparently this new version, like spending so much time with the Japanese dialogue and stuff is just, you get so much more from that part of the story than you would have gotten in the other one. Again, I'll never know.
I won't either. I've heard
Shogun was great.
I mean, yeah, I've heard great things about it, and multiple people have told me I should watch it, but I won't probably ever, just because it's too much, man. Can't do it.
I mean, it's like ten. It's I don't know why it's too much.
You know why?
I never understand your TV.
I do know why it's too much. I can explain it right now.
Okay, explain it.
Because I have other shows to watch that I'm not watching that aren't too much. I want to see Lioness season 2. I haven't started it yet. I have to watch the second season of Tokyo Vice, and I haven't watched it yet. I have all kinds of shows I'm trying to watch, and I just don't have time.
No, I mean, I feel you on that.
And honestly, like, the Shogun is like, I saw the trailer. It's not super interesting looking to me. I'm sure it's good. I have no doubt that it's, like, very well made and entertaining. But I'm just not pushing my buttons. I'm not, I'm not the biggest samurai guy to begin with. So
it's weird. Like with me and TV, it's like, if I'm not in before there are like three episodes out, it's never happening.
Right.
Like if, I think I watched Shogun when the first two had been released. And so I was happy to keep up with it. I really liked it. But 2 weeks later, if I hadn't started it yet, I still would never have watched it. It won't happen.
Fair.
And that's like the shows that drop is like the binge watches. I don't know how anybody watches those shows because it's like it's over already. Like you didn't even give me time to start, and now it's done.
I mean, I don't mind that. I kind of like if there's a show I really want to watch, I prefer them to just drop everything immediately because then I'm jazzed to watch it. Oh, there's another one. I need to watch second season of Old Man, Jeff Bridges.
I just can't imagine that's true.
I'm going to. I like the first season. I liked it a lot.
I thought you said it fell off toward the end or something.
It fell off hard.
Did it fall off hard? I don't remember.
I thought you said that. I don't know.
Yeah, dude.
I'll tell you what doesn't fall off is Lioness. So that's the main one right now.
You don't even know. I mean, I keep
your Nicole Kidman obsession.
No, she is great in it, actually, but she's not the main reason to watch.
Like, I was just listening to a podcast where they're talking about how much better her role is in season 2.
Nice.
I'm so close to starting Lioness.
Do it. All right, let's move on. I watched Winchester 73, directed by Anthony Mann, and starring Jimmy Stewart and Shelley Winters. Now, I gave it a 4.5. I was about midway through this movie before I realized who Shelley Winters is. And no, I don't mean that she's in Night of the Hunter or The Tenant. I mean, she's Roseanne's grandma in Roseanne. And I didn't know, I totally spaced on that. And she is like such a beautiful lady in this movie. And as Roseanne's grandmother, she is like the furthest from anything you would say is attractive. You know, she's just like this old lady with like a trucker hat, like she's not, and like a salty mouth, So it was really strange. But yeah, I Winchester 73 was absolutely wonderful. Probably like way better than it probably should have been, being that it's, I don't understand how this movie came about. Like, it's this weird, like, the story. It's like the it's story like
the follow, of a, right? The follow the gun thing. Yeah.
It's like a bizarre. It's like that shouldn't be good, but like the story is really fucking good. Like, he's chased. Like, it's about Jim Stewart chasing this this outlaw, and they don't like each other. And then there's a relation, a deeper relationship with them that's revealed later. Which I'm retarded. I didn't even see it coming. Honestly, it's great. It's a great reveal. And when Shelley Winters shows up, Shelley Winters is one of the few sort of damsels in a Western that I really, really enjoyed her presence in this movie. And I was not like mad every time she showed up, you know. A lot of times in Westerns, it's like every time a woman shows up, it's just like she's just there to, you know, try to talk the main guy out of fighting or like marry him or something. And it's just like, yeah. It's just, who gives a fuck? You know, let's get back to the story. But she's really like engaged, and she's really like mouthy with these guys. Like, you know, she's telling them what's what, and she's got an attitude, which is nice. She's got a character to her, which is good. And, yeah, man, I just really liked it. I liked it a lot. And it just reaffirms I need to, huh? Yeah. Dan Duryea. He's amazing. And apparently Tony Curtis is in this. Who is Tony Curtis in this? I don't even remember him being in this.
I'm not sure.
But Rock Hudson as the Indian. a little racist, but you know, he was good at it. I liked him in the role, you know, just a little bit. I don't know. I love the scene when those, like the three outlaws are like trying to, they don't have any guns, you know, they got disarmed. And so they go to that, like it's like a tavern in the middle of nowhere, and there's that guy selling guns there, and they play poker with him. That whole scene was great, and whoever that guy is, that guy was awesome. Yeah, I just really enjoyed this movie, and it just reaffirms that I need to watch way more James Stewart and Anthony Mann westerns.
Anthony Mann is trying to avoid saying the man, and he's just he's the fucking guy.
he's the man. He's the man.
He's one.
He's guy. The guy.
Yeah. Like very actively, like try to do like a deep dive on his stuff. Seen almost all of his stuff, and really like Winchester 73. Wouldn't consider it my favorite. I think, have you guys seen The Naked Spur?
I have. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that one's always been my favorite, but I haven't seen these in a while. Man from Laramie Rules.
I didn't see. I liked Winchester way more than The Naked Spur, but.
It's cool.
You know, I have a lot of these movies on my watch list. Like, I have Man of the West and The Tin Star and things like this on my watch list. I really want to see more stuff, so I'm going to try to get that going.
Yeah, do it. I mean, like, most of these are great. Most of them are short. John, you know, Dan, I'm going to pronounce it Duryea. That feels right.
Right? Duryea?
Duryea? Okay. Dan Duryea.
That's what it feels like, Duryea to me. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's good. He's the villain in like one of the first movies I ever recommended to you.
Oh,
so you asked Silver me for Load? Yeah, Silver Load. You asked me for like a Western, and I think I just gave you like the most recent one I watched and liked.
Yeah.
And it's like a weirdo fucking Western.
I've been meaning to rewatch it for a while, actually, because I didn't work for me back then. But that was like before I wouldn't allow myself to like a Western that was old like this, you know?
Yeah.
It's like now I feel like I might feel very differently about it.
You might. You might also not, because it's definitely like in that, it's like a cheapie. It's like a very, very sure. small production. So who knows?
All right. Well, anyway, that's Winchester 73. Gotta do it.
New Criterion 4K coming out.
That's why in January. I watched it. Yeah, that's why I watched it, because it dropped on that. And then you said something in the text like it's great, and I was like, okay, I'll check that out. So I was in the mood for a Western. I love Westerns, man. I fucking love Westerns. All right.
there's the foreshadowing. Guess is that what we're doing next time?
No. It's not. It's not. You could never guess the movie that I have picked for next deep dive.
Okay.
You could never guess it. And I honestly, I think I'm not even gonna say. Let's just keep going. Kevin?
Let's see. I watched Blue Giant, which is an anime about some kids wanting to play jazz, and they play jazz, and it's pretty good. And then there's some gut-wrenching stuff towards the end, but yeah, solid movie. And I'll just do this one real quick. So I, like a lot of things, I felt like I was unfair to Le Samurai, the Jean-Pierre Melville film. And I know that I was unfair, but watching it again now, I feel like it still did not land for me. I can appreciate things about it more now, but I'm sorry. The entire first half of the film is him stuck in a police station while they try to figure out whether he was the murderer or not. It's just...
It didn't work for you?
No, it's just not for me.
Sounds awesome to me. I don't know.
Sorry.
I don't even remember. I mean, it's been so long since I've seen this.
Yeah.
Loved it in the moment. Loved almost all Melville in the moment.
I would like to see other stuff. You know, like Bob Le Flambeur and Cercle Rouge and, you know.
I have a feeling, just based on who I was when I watched this for the first time, I would bet that Le Samurai is the most, like, precious of all of his films.
Mm.
I bet if you watch, like, Army of Shadows, it might be.
I remember really, really liking Army of Shadows.
Okay.
So I would probably appreciate it more now.
So. I have never seen a Melville film.
That reaction is like,
ooh.
Like,
No. I'm just surprised. I thought you guys would be disgusted by me. I started The Silence of the Sea once, but didn't finish it.
How is that the one?
87 minutes. Like, can you blame them?
Yeah, I mean, I would never, like, I've heard a lot of good things about Army of Shadows, but then it's like fucking 2.5 hours long. I don't know.
Yeah.
And, like, the rest of these, I mean, I've heard good things about the first, obviously, like, you know, Le Samurai and Le Cercle Rouge also. And, I mean, I'm sure that these are all worth my time. I just haven't watched them. I don't know what to tell you, you know? Whatever.
I just...
Loved him in Breathless. JR?
Alright, cool. I'll go with something I love. I watched The Taste of Things, which is a French movie made by French-Vietnamese filmmaker Tran Anh Hung, and this was like one of those movies on like my 2023 watch list. I was like, I don't know when this is going to happen. And it's like still not streaming anywhere. Yeah, am I gonna buy a Blu-ray or something? I did not, but you know, eventually found a way to watch it. And you know, this falls into that category of just like it's just JR shit. It's JR crack. You know, this is it's a period piece, like late 1800s, French countryside, and it is like a love story. It's a relationship story, but it is also like a cooking porn story as well. So like, not only are we cooking, but we're cooking in like this glorious, like, you know, pre-electricity, at least for the French countryside kitchen. And we're watching these people eat by candlelight. And I was just like, you know, I'm just like having all these little like food orgasms as I'm watching it. And so I loved it. And like the two main characters, Benoit, played by Benoit Magimel, that can't be right. And Juliette Binoche are just like so moving. Binoche is a chef. She is the personal chef of this guy. He's rich. He's like owns this estate. But like they are also lovers. And he has a personal chef, but he is also like he might as well be a chef as well. Like he is active in the cooking. And for like the first 35 minutes, you're just like watching them operate this kitchen and feed his friends. And then we kind of go into the story of just dealing with parts of their relationship and how she like refuses to marry him. And it's so boring to talk about, and it's so fucking pretty to watch. And I loved it. And it's one of those movies that like got the qualifying for Oscars 2023 release date, but might end up on like other people's 2024 movie lists or like best of the year lists. So I guess who knows what I'm going to do with it. But I gave this a 5 out of 5. So I love it.
Yikes.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a hero.
I'm not quite a hero.
What's this movie called?
I'm biased as fuck towards specific things appearing in films.
19th century food porn in the French countryside. What's this movie called?
It's called The Taste of Things. This was the film that France submitted for international feature over Anatomy of a Fall. And everyone thought they were idiots for doing that. And I guess they were, since everyone loved Anatomy of a Fall. But I get it. They're like, we've got this beautiful piece of art with Juliette Binoche. Let's try and do it.
It's too long.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's just over 2 hours. It's like a 10 minutes of credits situation.
This guy directed Norwegian Wood.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I've seen two of his movies. I've not seen Norwegian Wood. I've seen The Scent of Green Papaya and Cyclo.
Cool. Yeah, I've never heard of this. I mean, I've only heard of Norwegian Wood. I've never heard of this guy before. But, you know, maybe, I don't know, make it a deep dive one day. I'll watch it.
I'll do that in a few years, yeah.
Okay, sounds good.
Maybe it'll come to a streaming service in 2030.
Maybe. Okay. I watched Woman of the Hour, Too Sweet to Be Sour, directed by Anna Kendrick. Starring Anna Kendrick as Cheryl Bradshaw, which I'm not sure if that's the real name of the woman. A lot of the names are changed in this movie. But it's about the woman who went on the dating game and chose the serial killer as her the winner.
As one does. Yeah.
Date with, yeah. A guy named Rodney Alcala, who's played by Daniel Zavato here. And this movie is good. And I went into it thinking it would not be at all because, you know, it's not like, no offense to Anna Kendrick, but it's directed by Anna Kendrick. And I would not expecting
just sort of like a vanity piece.
I don't know what I was. I was just expecting like it to be like not in good taste and like sort of like I was definitely expecting like overt, you know, feminist sort of stuff and like not in a smart way, which maybe is wrong of me, but those overt feminist things are in this movie. This movie has a very like, it creates scenes to showcase how women are not believed in certain situations, especially in this time in the 70s. And how that puts them in dangerous situations. But it is actually really intelligently written and well done, even in those scenes. The guy who plays Daniel Zavato, the guy who plays Rodney Alcala, it does a really good job as that guy. Very creepy. You know, there are moments where it feels like Kendrick will watch this movie 10 years from now, after she's directed a bunch of stuff and become the new Greta Gerwig, and she'll realize that she, you know, hung too long on a shot or showed too much of a murder scene. But I will say a lot of it sort of, she gains back a lot of ground with the last 10 minutes or so, which I thought was really wonderful and really well done and incredibly well acted by Zavato and this other girl, whose name is Autumn Best, who's like a, almost like a child. I think she's like 17 or something, but she's one of his would-be victims. And it's just this amazing scene at the end of the film. And it's one of those scenes where you've got a character who knows they're in trouble, but is very clear-headed and acting in a very smart way to get themselves out of the trouble. And it works. And it's really, it's just a really well-written, well-constructed scene and or a couple of scenes. And yeah, the biggest strike against this movie, I'd say, is the actual dating game sequence itself is like weird and overwritten, and they changed the name of the host and like all sorts of other things. I'm not sure why, maybe like legal reasons, I don't know. And just like, I don't know, it's very like not taking place in reality during that scene. Like shit gets really insane with some of the things that the character that Kendrick is playing, some of the things she does and says during that scene, just like obviously would never happen. But yeah, aside from that, I'd say it was a very watchable, very like well-made movie. So check it out.
What is the context of Pete Holmes appearing?
Pete Holmes is a guy who is friends with her. Maybe he's a coworker with her. They're both actors, I think. Or maybe she's living with him even, but they're not dating. And he obviously wants to date her really badly, and she is not into it. But then she does end up... That's one of the sort of smart moments early on. It's like he goes to a bar with her, and then he sort of... She's having a down day because she lost some audition or something. And he like sort of is comforting her, but he's angling to... you know, make something happen. You know, he goes in for a kiss and she's like, what? Like, what are you doing? And then he gets all butthurt about being rejected. And then the next cut is they wake up in bed together. Like she wakes up in bed, like she slept with him. And it's like, she slept with him because he made her feel guilty to sleep with, you know what I mean? So I was like, that's an interesting, like, I've never seen that in a movie before, where like the guy literally guilts the girl into sleeping with him, you know? So that was pretty interesting. And what a great piece of casting, Pete Holmes in a role like that, because he looks like a kind of guy who would guilt a woman into sleeping with him.
Yeah, sure he would love to be described that way, although he did make basically a whole HBO show about that. But
right,
I enjoy his comedy, so just curious.
Okay. Yeah, so anyways, yeah, this movie is better than you would think it is. You should watch it.
I know this is on Sarah's radar. She's mentioned.
Yeah, I watched it because Nicole said it was... Well, actually, she didn't even say it was good. She was just like, she was so excited to watch this. And I was like, I don't know. And then that's what happened. She was watching it and I saw like a scene of it on mute, but the subtitles were on. And from that scene, I was like, oh, that's... Like, they did something interesting in that scene. And I was like, that's really interesting. I wouldn't have expected that. So it made me want to watch it, and I watched it. Anyway. JR? Kevin? Who's Kevin? Kevin? Sorry.
I'm out.
No, Kevin's out.
Yep.
Okay, then yeah, I'll wrap up. Say, I watched Problemista, which came out earlier this year. It's a Julio Torres project, who has a couple shows on HBO. He did like Los Espookies, I think, and he has done like a miniseries since Problemista came out called Phantasmas, something like that. I haven't seen any of his TV stuff, but a friend told me that I should watch Problemista. He said it was fantastic. And it's really good. And it, you know, it's like this sort of moderately surreal story of this, you know, he's like a aspirational toy maker who is working in America and trying to stay in America, and ends up kind of working with Tilda Swinton, trying to get her to sponsor his stay, which ends up being complicated. And Tilda Swinton plays like just the most obnoxious human on the planet. And it's funny, and she's really good. And, you know, it's like funny, cute, emotional. It's like all those things. And it's definitely a movie where like your mileage may vary, because I think if you do not vibe with its tone, it might just end up being really annoying, but it worked for me.
Would you call it singular?
I mean, yes. Yeah.
That's what
is that?
Ayo Itabari's review says it's singular with an exclamation point.
Sure.
All right.
I probably will watch if I can ever like make the time for it. I will try to watch some of his TV stuff, 'cause I've heard very good things about, his shows as well.
What are his shows again? Sorry.
So I believe one was Los Spookies, and these are both on HBO or Max.
Right.
And the other one is
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I can't think. I cannot pull up the correct name.
Phantasmas?
There we go.
He's a writer on Saturday Night Live. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know either.
Interesting. For like years and years and years, 2016 to 2023.
Whoa.
Sixty episodes. Oh. He's almost 40, dude. He's born in 87.
He's so like small and looks very young.
Yeah, I agree. Because I was like looking at the picture, and I've seen this poster, and I always thought he was like a 15-year-old. I didn't know that was him, you know.
He's older than me.
Oh. Okay. Cool. The last thing I would say is I rewatched Silence, first time since the theater. Saw it twice in the theater, but sort of been itching to rewatch it. I don't know why. I mean, other than that, it's just amazing and I love it. I turned it on. It's just, it's a masterpiece. It's Scorsese's late career masterpiece, you know? All the rest of the movies in the last 10 years be damned. This is it. This is the one. And even this is sort of like one of his, you know, you can like sort of demarcate a certain era that he's in where he calms down with the camera after Wolf of Wall Street, maybe. But there are so many interesting like shots and movements of the camera going on in this movie. In particular, I'm just going to talk about one where Garfield's character is he's in a prison cell, like an outdoor cell, and he witnesses in the execution of one of his Christian brothers via beheading with a katana. And just the way that they like drag the body and the body's leaking blood onto the ground, and they like the camera is on him looking like at like the gate where what's his face runs out, the main like sort of his Judas essentially. I forget what his name is. Sorry, I gotta find it. Kichichiro, who's like the Judas character for him. He's like always like asking forgiveness and then betraying him. And he like runs out, and then like the camera pans over like this really like clean pan left, and you're following the blood trail. And then he looks back and forth like three times, and it's just the camera keeps moving. I was just really intrigued by it, and it's just there's way more movement than I remembered there being. I remember it being like way more stoic, but it's actually got a lot of energy. And this movie fucking rocks. I don't know. It's just great. And the acting is amazing. And even when like Liam Neeson comes in at the end, and I'm just like, I always worried about that for some reason, even though like Liam Neeson's a good actor, but you know, you're always just like, oh, this guy was in Taken, like, oh my God, like what's gonna, you know? And then, but he comes in and he's fucking amazing in this. Like he's so good. And his scenes with Garfield at the end there, where he's sort of explaining, like, you know, it is what it is. Like, we're, you know, we work for the Shogunate now, and we're going to identify Christian iconography and, you know, get it destroyed. And that's what our job is. And I have a wife and I have kids and, you know, this is our life. This is so sad and amazing. I don't know. I love this movie. Silence is great. If you haven't seen Silence at this point, do yourself a favor. I mean, this is totally slept on too. Like, nobody talks about Silence. You know, it's all The Irishman, because The Irishman got a fucking Criterion release. This is the movie. Where's the Criterion of Silence?
Yeah.
It'd make me start buying Criterions again.
Who distributed Silence?
Oh, I don't even know. That's a great question. I just clicked out of it. Who did it? Paramount. I don't know. Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers, right?
It looks like Paramount. Distributed by Paramount. Yeah.
That's all right. That's right the first time.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a Blu-ray of it. I watched it on Plex, but I have a Blu-ray of it in a box somewhere. But anyway. Okay. That's it for today, right? So I'm going to give you guys my choice for the next deep dive. Now, I will say this. Kevin almost had me pull an audible with his Barbette Schroeder nonsense, and I almost... I almost grabbed the one Barbette Schroeder movie that's on my deep dive list.
Oh my God. But
I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it because I already had one planned. And I'm not going to mandate which cut of this movie you have to watch.
God damn it. What is it? Like, is this going to be Alien 3? What is this going to be?
Alien 3. What a wild choice that would be. We're going to watch. This is my pick, JR. So you just hush up, bud. We're going to watch Alexander.
Oh.
Oh, man.
It's done. It's in the annals of Film Yak now. I've said it. We're going to watch Alexander, and I am going to watch the ultimate cut because it's the one I haven't seen. And I would encourage you guys to watch at least the final cut, but you know, it's not mandatory. You watch whatever you want. I just feel like we're going to be, if you watch theatrical, we're going to be watching wildly different films.
Yeah. I don't, which one have I seen? I assume I've seen the theatrical.
I saw theatrical twice in the theater, hated it both times. And then I saw the final cut a few years ago and really enjoyed it. So,
God, so is the final cut longer than 3 hours?
The final cut is the longest one. It's 3.5 plus. Ultimate cut's only 3:26.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, guys.
Okay.
No, you're not. You're not sorry. You're not sorry at all.
It's a fun, it's, you know, pretend it's 3 episodes of some garbage television show that you guys watch, you know?
So the director's cut is 9 minutes shorter. Cut 18 minutes and added 9.
I've never seen the director's cut. I've only seen theatrical and final.
Final cut. All right. So who did the ultimate cut?
He did. At the request of Warner Brothers, I think, whoever did the movie, they asked him to do another cut, and he decided that he had put too much into the final cut, and so he excised like 7 minutes.
Oh, no shit. Okay. Why would they ask him to do that? Why would they want that?
I think they wanted it to sell more Blu-rays. It was like a 10th anniversary thing.
Okay. All right. People used to make money with that. That makes sense.
All yes. Right. Now one would ask him to do that, but...
Yeah, I mean, why doesn't Oliver Stone have like a Snyder fan base?
I mean, he doesn't make comic book movies for one.
Why aren't they calling for the Stone cut of Savages?
Oh, I would love a different cut of Savages. I was so psyched for Savages, and what a disaster that movie was.
It's like we'd all like Stone to be a better filmmaker.
Yes.
That's the issue.
I think he's just sort of done. I think his movies are.
Isn't he just doing like political documentaries now?
He is, but I mean, I'm saying even if he did like his last movie was like Snowden, and it was like one of the worst movies I've ever seen. Like Snowden was a pile of dog shit. I think he's just out of it. I don't think he could make a good movie anymore. In this world with the resources that are available to him.
Well, yeah. I mean, he shouldn't have made shit like Alexander and Savages.
Alexander is the last good movie that he made.
You said you hated it both times.
I did the first time, but when I watched the other cut, the extra. That's the problem, is that he released his theatrical cut and it's garbage. He should have released his ultimate cut as the theatrical. He could do that now. See, he could get away, like, if he, like Scorsese can get away with releasing a 3.5 hour movie. Like, if he had cut this right, I feel like they would have released it maybe less wide or something, but, and it would have worked better. But I don't know. Apparently, like, Colin Farrell says this was like the beginning of the end for his career, like the first phase of his career. Like sort of imploded after this movie, and then he realized what he was doing wrong, and he got sober. And
no. All right, I have no idea where I will find the ultimate cut, but find it, I will try.
Yeah, they have a Blu-ray in the library system.
Yeah, my library doesn't have it because they don't get many Blu-rays.
Lame.
You're gonna have to download it, rent it.
I can rent it. All right, I can rent it for $3. Cool.
Perfect.
Probably have to rent it twice because it's so long. All right, cool.
All right. Well, we're gonna watch Alexander for next time, and until then, thank you for listening. And visit our website, filmiac.castos.com, and write to us at filmiacpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll see you later. Bye bye.
Szabadulást várva, felség uram meg a lányom.